Genesis chapter 37, please. Genesis chapter 37, I want to look at the story of Joseph today. I want to read from verse 1 of chapter 37, give the initial life of Joseph, quite an ominous introduction to his life, which in many cases sets stage critically for the rest of his life. But we'll see that a little later on. And then I want to turn over to Genesis chapter 50. Because for the most part, the story, the latter part of Genesis 37 to chapter 50 is taken up with the story of this one man, Joseph. Let's read Genesis chapter 37 and the verse 1. And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph being 17 years old. And let me interject here. You'll see in this verse 2, this phrase, these are the generations of Jacob. This is known as the Toledoth, the beginning of a new section, the Toledoth section. If you go to verse 1 of chapter 36, you read, and now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. And then in chapter 36, verse 9, just to give you in this one page, these Toledoth sections, these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in Mount Seir, and it is thought that Genesis is divided up into these generations. Now, if I can skip back a few chapters to chapter 12, where God deals with Abraham, these are the generations of Abraham, and God is building with Abraham a family, a nation. He's going to make out of Abraham a nation. Okay, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and we have Esau, who was reprobate, who was not going to be in this family of Israel, who was going to separate himself, and who was, as we saw in the study of Obadiah, a man who was going to be a type and a symbol of the enemies of Christ and a symbol of reprobation. Okay, but God is bringing this story in Genesis from Abraham, and he's continuing the story through Genesis. He comes to chapter 36, the writer Moses comes to chapter 36, and he includes the generations of Esau to give the context. And he gives all of these generations of the genealogies of Esau. Chapter 37, this is whom God is not going to work with. Chapter 37 is a fresh start, as it were, and this is God is picking up. Moses is picking up the story of God working through his people. And we're going to see in the story of Joseph how that God is going to preserve his people, how that God is going to continue the story of Abraham, preserving Israel as they went down into Egypt, bringing them back up out of Egypt, preserving them in famine. And God's progressive revelation of his preservation for God's people. And so we start here at verse 2 of chapter 37. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Bilhah and Zilpah were the handmaidens of Leah and Rachel. Joseph associates with them. That's interesting. Significant. Verse 3. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colours. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him, and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and though my sheaf arose, and also stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood around about, and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said unto him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for the dreams, and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it to his brethren, and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold the sun and the moon and the 11 stars did obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. His father rebuked him and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him. But his father observed the same. Turn over, please, to Genesis chapter 50. We come to the end of the story now. A very significant part of the story. What has happened in between is 13 years of persecution. 13 years where Joseph was isolated from his brethren, where he was tortured and tormented and persecuted, and at the same time lifted up and back down again on an emotional roller coaster for 13 years. And then after that, he was the Prime Minister of Israel. But Jacob here is dying. And the brethren of Jacob, of Joseph, think in themselves, because of all the harm that they had done to Joseph, they think when father dies here, when old man Jacob dies, Joseph is going to take his revenge out on us. Remember what Esau, what his plan was? When his father died, he was going to take his revenge out on Jacob. And now the brethren of Joseph say to themselves, when old man Jacob dies, Joseph is going to pay us back royally. So the old man dies, and Joseph, verse 19, said unto them, Fear not, for I am in the place of God. But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore, fear ye not. I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. Amen. We trust the Lord will bless these readings of his word to our hearts. The story of Joseph, spanning, as I've said, from chapter 37 to chapter 50, the latter part of the book of Genesis, is an intriguing one. Joseph holds for us one of the most complete biographies of Scripture, coming from his birth of Rachel and Jacob, to his manhood, his 17 years old, his teenage years, and following right through until his death. And these years, a couple of decades or more, that are specifically dealt with in detail, and how Joseph handled himself and handled others who were under him, how he dealt with his family, how he dealt with his loved ones, how he dealt with the nation as Prime Minister of Egypt for years. And the Lord saw fit to record for us this history of Joseph. It is a story that appeals both to young and old, because it begins at his birth. It zooms in chapter 37 until his teenage years, and the young person who is seeking the will of God, perhaps, can identify something of the mindset, can identify with something of the feelings of Joseph, how the Lord has dealt with him, how the Lord has guided him, how the Lord has protected him down into Egypt. But it is a story that appeals to all, because it is a story that has both ups and downs. It is a story that is filled with vicissitudes of life, persecutions. It is a story that deals with vice and virtue, with prosperity and persecution, with trials and thrills. It is a story that deals with the providences of life as we face them, both the bitter providences and the sweet providences. And so the biography of Joseph is one that we do well to look into, that we do well to learn from, that we do well to analyse. As we look at this overview of the life of Joseph today, I trust we will see something of this man who, through the persecution, stayed steadfast, who in the midst of prosperity stayed stable. He did not let it go to his head. He did not get bitter with persecution. But in the vicissitudes of life, which span to both extremes, Joseph is a man who stands out in Scripture as a man of purpose. A man of purpose. He is held out in Scripture as a type or a parallel or similarities with Christ. Whatever word you want to use, type, similarities, parallel. There are many things in his life that parallel the life of Christ. He was beloved by the Father. He was hated by his brethren. He was put to death, in effect, by his brethren. He went down into Egypt. Remember, Joseph takes Christ down into Egypt in less than favorable circumstances because Herod is seeking Christ's life. And then Christ comes back up out of Egypt. And this is what we see at the end of the story in chapter 50, where Joseph is brought up in his coffin, but still brought up out of Egypt. And so there are many, 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 I've just mentioned a few, many parallels to the life and work of Christ. Some people would parallel Joseph with David also. One of the most focused parts of the story of Joseph is his fleeing from the hand of Potiphar's wife. Potiphar's wife sought to lure him and seduce him into an immoral relationship, and Joseph fled from her, being tempted repeatedly. He fled from her. David, on the other hand, in one instance, looks out of his window while he should have been at war. And he sees Bathsheba, and he falls into sin. And so Joseph has been paralleled with David in Scripture. But I want us to come today to look at the life of Joseph. Take an overview. Take a panoramic view of the life of this man and see Joseph as a man of purpose. What was it? What was it that enabled Joseph in persecution to stay stable? What was it that enabled Joseph in persecution to remain calm? To remain steadfast? To remain doing the work of God as he had done. And at the same time, in times of prosperity, not to allow that prosperity to go to his head. Not to allow that prosperity to get vengeance on his brethren. What was it that enabled Joseph, throughout all of his life, to remain as a man of purpose? As a man stable, as a man constant in life. And I trust as we look to the story of Joseph today that we will see aspects of his life that we need to emulate. Aspects of his life that we need to consider for our own lives. For our own stability in this world of vicissitudes. In this world that is becoming more and more unstable. We need more stability than ever. First thing I want us to notice is Joseph's sense of purpose. Joseph's sense of purpose. From an early age, from his mid-teens, Joseph was a man of purpose. He had this sense of the purpose of God in his life. He had this sense, if I could put it another way, of a God-given purpose. And we see this in his dreams that he had in chapter 37, verses 5 and following. Now the purpose of Joseph and the sense of the purpose that he had, the sense of destiny that he had, was not an ambition to do something. I want you to understand this. It was not a sense of ambition that every young person has. It was not a sense of ambition that he might make his life count for something. That is not what we're dealing with here. It is not a sense that he, as we hear today, that he wanted to give something back into the community. That's not what Joseph's sense of purpose was. It was not that idea that he had to accomplish something in life, that he had to get somewhere, that he had to do something in order to make his life look as if he had accomplished something in life, that he had risen to the higher echelons of society, that he had beaten all the odds against him, and that he has made something of life. That is not what Joseph's sense of purpose was. We need to get rid of this idea, this humanistic, materialistic, modern idea that we have to accomplish something that the world sees, that we have gotten somewhere, that we have established a house, that we are able to buy a good car, that we have established a steady job. All of these things are desirable, but that is not the stated purpose of the Christian. That is not the purpose of Christianity. And that ought not to be our dream. That ought not to be what drives us as Christians. Joseph had this sense of divine destiny. An understanding, not that he was going to do something, not that he was going to be something, but an understanding that God was going to use him. That God was going to use him. Many have looked upon these dreams of Joseph as a teenager flaunting these grandiose ideas, grandiose dreams of a teenager, as a sort of psychological bravado. Many have criticized Joseph as being some bombastic teenager. But I think those who would criticize Joseph for being the above are twisting the evidence and are ignoring the remainder of Joseph's life. If Joseph is to be blamed for anything, it is that he was naive to his brother's pride. What we see in Joseph in revealing these dreams, I believe, is the innocence of mind and heart, the enthusiasm of a young man who is sold out for God, who has seen God, and who has a sense that God is going to use him. And regardless of what the world says, regardless of what the family says, Joseph is sold out for God. And he reveals these dreams out of enthusiasm, out of the purpose of God in his life. He shares his heart. Like Isaiah said in Isaiah chapter 6, Job says it publicly, "Here am I, sent me." As David says when he went up against Goliath, "Is there not a cause?" Regardless of his brothers, Elihu was criticizing them, making fun of him and mocking him. David said, "Is there not a cause?" In his youthful enthusiasm and exuberance, because God had given him a sense of divine destiny, that God was going to use him. Now the Lord revealed to him through these dreams. Now it is remarkable that the sense of purpose that Joseph had was revealed by the dreams. We notice later on as he interprets the dreams of the butler and the baker, and he interprets the dreams of Pharaoh, that Joseph was a man who was given that God-given ability to interpret the dreams. And so I believe Joseph knew what was going on here. The dreams of the sheaves, as he said in the chapter here, 37, his brethren knew that Joseph, the sense that he had, that his family were going to bow down to him. He had this sense of divine destiny that he was going to be in a role of leadership. That he was going to rise to such a position one day that the rest of his family would bow down to him. He knew that. He knew that. That was in his consciousness from he was 17 years old. I want you to understand that. I want you to keep that in your mind. But what is remarkable about this is that God did not reveal himself as he had done previously to Abraham and Jacob. He revealed himself by a dream. But the dreams that Abraham and Jacob had were revealed orally. The Lord spoke to Abraham. The Lord spoke to Jacob. And Jacob could say, "This is what my ears have heard. This is what God has revealed to me." Joseph could not say that. Joseph had this sense of purpose. It was a sense that God gave him. It was a sense that he was going to be used of God. He was going to fulfill the will of God some way or some other way. Whatever way that was going to be. A God-given purpose to life that was only discernible by himself and was vague in and of itself. It was vague in the sense that it was a dream. Joseph, and I want you to understand this, young person, if you're seeking the will of God, or older person, if you're seeking the will of God, Joseph was driven by providence to where God was going to use him. Joseph was not led by precept. Joseph was driven by providence. He had this sense from the dream that God was going to use him one day. But it was by providence, bitter and sweet providences, that God was going to drive him in circumstances beyond his control. Throughout this period of time, for 13 years, until he would get to Pharaoh's house, he was driven by bitter providences. God was driving him along. And he was pliable in the hands of God in these circumstances. Because he had this sense of purpose. He had this sense of purpose. It is in this fact, this sense, and I emphasize the word sense because it is not a stated purpose. God did not say to Joseph, "This is what you're going to do 13 years from now." God did not say to Joseph, "This is what I want you to do, and I'm going to prepare you to do this." It was not a stated purpose. It was a sense of purpose that was not an event. It was a sense of purpose that was not a particular task. God did not reveal to Joseph what he was destined to do. But God revealed to him a sense of divine destiny. That's significant. For 13 years, Joseph waited before God. For 13 years, Joseph labored under bitter providences until the Lord brought him to that point that was discernible in his life. For 13 years, Joseph labored under these bitter providences until he came to the place in Pharaoh's house where Pharaoh said, "Joseph, you do the task. You be prime minister. You go out through the length and breadth of Egypt and get the corn and get the stuff. You do this task and be my second in command." That was the discernible point in Joseph's life where he could say, "Now, the Lord is using me discernibly, definitely." But what about those 13 years previous? What about that interval period where Joseph was led by these bitter providences? What enabled him? What sustained him to rise above the bitterness of God's providence? It was that sense of purpose. It was that sense that God was going to use him. And in this roller coaster of bitter and sweet providences, God brought him through. He had been despised by his brothers and at the same time loved by his father. He had been favored by his master, Potiphar, and slandered with a charge of immorality against his master's wife. He had been in prison, favored by all, but still in prison. And he had told and interpreted the dreams of the baker and the butler and at the same time forgotten for 2 full years more by the butler who was restored to his job. Throughout all of this, lying in the prison cell, wondering why, what is God doing for me and with me, Joseph labored on. During those years, Joseph was constant. How could he be constant? How could he fulfill his job in the midst of all these providences, vicissitudes, back and forward, between good and bad? I want you to understand that Joseph, in this period of time, took no shortcuts. He waited on God, and he was faithful in whatever task the Lord gave him to hand. He was faithful in whatever task through that whole period for 13 years while he had this sense of purpose. Whatever task the Lord gave Joseph to do, whether in the house of Potiphar where he was exalted to the second in command in Potiphar's house, or whether it was in the prison house, Joseph took that task and he did his best. With a cheerful heart, he worked and waited on God. Whether it was tending sheep for his father, or running messages to his brother for his father, whether it was as a prison warden or serving Potiphar, whatever job Joseph found at hand, he did it gladly, tirelessly, plodding on. Whatsoever he found his hand found to do, he did it with all his might. Why? Why did he do this? How could he do this? If you look at the struggles that he had, I don't think there's any of us here today can enter into the struggles and the bitter providences that Joseph had. I don't know of any here today who have had slanderous attack against them morally. I don't know of any here today who have been imprisoned. I don't know of any here today who have been cast out by their parents or by their family and sought to be killed by their family. I don't know of any here today who have gone through what Joseph has gone through. And yet he remains stable. He remains cheerful. How can he do this? He had one purpose, and that purpose was to please God. He had one fear, and that fear was to sin against God. How can I do this great evil and sin against God, he said to Potiphar's wife. He had one comfort, and that was the continued presence of God. The continued presence of God. It is in this continued presence of God that Joseph found the wherewithal to rise above the trials of life. It is in this continued presence of God that Joseph found the purpose of God kept alive. The presence of God in Joseph's life is evident throughout the story. If you look at chapter 39, in the verse 2. Verse 1 says that Joseph was brought into Egypt and Potiphar bought him as a slave. And verse 2 says, and the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper. Now here's a man who has just been sold by his family. Here's a man who has been separated from his father, whom he loved dearly. And the presence of the Lord is still with him in Potiphar's house. And Joseph, verse 4, found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from that time that he was made overseer of his house, he made, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. Not only was Joseph blessed by the presence of God, but Potiphar's house, Potiphar's crops were blessed by Joseph's presence. Chapter 39, verse 6. We see that he was favored, and Joseph left, and he, Potiphar, left all that he had in Joseph's hands. And he knew not aught that he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. Now, I don't know about you, but as I read this story, I do not see an individual teenager who's running around with a long face, moping and crying and whining because God has sold him into Egypt. I see an individual here who has laid hold on life, who has a purpose in life, and who rises above the circumstances, takes the task at hand that the Lord has, and he does it with all his heart, cheerfully. Because God is with him, and he is well favored. You look at chapter 39, verse 21. We see the same thing. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he showed mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. He's now in prison. He has now had a slanderous moral accusation against him. And he's in prison. He's not lying in the corner crying and whining, feeling sorry for himself. He is favored. Favored. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. Here's a man who took the task at hand and did it cheerfully, tirelessly, plodding on and on and on with this sense of destiny, not knowing what God was going to do with him, but taking what he had at that time and doing it for God. Doing it for God. It was this sense of purpose. It was this presence of God, rather, that kept his sense of purpose alive. It was this all-dominating consciousness of life. He believed in God. He believed in the nearness of God. He believed in the interest of God in his life. He believed in the relevance of God for his life. And he believed in the sovereignty of God over his life. That, my friend, is what kept Joseph stable in a changing world. God to Joseph was not afar off. God to Joseph was not disinterested and irrelevant. God was real to Joseph. Real. Joseph knew more of both persecution and prosperity than most of us will ever know. Yet no clouds of persecution obscured the presence of God. No beams of prosperity blinded his eyes to the presence of God. Through it all, Joseph stayed stable. God dwelt with him. There's this sense of God-given purpose and the presence of God that governed his life. It is this sense of God-given purpose and a God-given presence that kept him positive, that enabled him not to murmur, that enabled him not to complain. I've read through this story, and I read it again yesterday to see if I could find any negativity in the life of Joseph. And the only hint of negativity was when he said to the butler, "Think of me when it is well with thee." Things aren't well with me here, but think of me when it is well with you. And that hint, I say, of complaining is not a complaint. It's a statement of fact. Joseph was no complainer. Joseph was no murmurer. Not in Joseph's vocabulary. He took what he had to do. He took what God had given into his hand. And he did it to the glory of God. He did it to the glory of God. He was willing to help others, even in persecution. He was willing to show kindness to others, even in persecution. And he did not let circumstances interfere or affect his relationship to others. I want you to understand that. I want you to think of that. He did not let his circumstances, either persecution or prosperity, interfere with his relationship to others. How easy it is for us, if we have a bad day, we're in some bad mood, we cut the face of someone who has done us no wrong. We're short and cutting because our circumstances are adverse. Joseph showed kindness. No spirit of negativity. Spirit of negativity, the spirit of complaining, not only kill your spiritual life, the spirit of complaining, as the Israelites found in the wilderness, continually complaining, killed them. It killed them. Literally. Killed them. The spirit of complaining and the spirit of murmuring will drain you of spiritual life. And it will drain those whom you work with. Negativity in life. Mumbling and murmuring in life. Is like a syringe that draws out spiritual life and effectual work for God. Joseph knew nothing of it. Why? Because he had a continued sense of the presence of God. It is not only a sense of the purpose of God, but a sense of the presence of God. And the presence of God is important here. Because it is one thing to do something for God. It's another thing to do something with God. I want you to see the distinction. Often we say in life, when things are getting hard and when the work of God gets hard, well, I'm doing this for the Lord. And we use that. Well, I'm doing this for the Lord. It's hard and I don't like it and I'm getting criticized and I'm getting all of this. But I'm doing it for the Lord. That's not enough. If you get on like that and if you go on like that, then you will eventually drain yourself. It is one thing to do it for the Lord. It is quite another thing to do it with the Lord. And it is that presence of God. It is that witness of God, if I could put it that way, that enables us to do it with a heart and a half. That enables us to do it with a gladness of heart. To get through the struggles. To rise above the trials. And to do something for God, with God. This is what Joseph was governed by. This is what led him. Not only throughout the 13 years of struggle and into the years of prosperity in the latter part of his life, but this, my friend, is what gave him that forgiving spirit. Now, Joseph, do not think in closing, let me close up here with this thought. Do not think that Joseph was a weakling. Do not think that Joseph had no mind of his own. Do not think for a minute that Joseph was so wimp. Joseph was no wimp. He was strong of character. It was that strength of character that enabled him to endure his brother's hatred. It was that strength of character that enabled him, when his brothers came down to Egypt, that stopped him either from running them out of town, as many of us would have done, or from throwing himself on them in some sentimental love for months and years. Joseph worked with his brothers. And understand what Joseph was doing. He was not playing games with his brothers when he sent them back up to their father and he made all these regulations that you need to bring Simeon down and he put the silver cup in the youngest sack. He was not playing games with his brothers. He was making them feel, rightly, their sense of guilt. He was bringing them to a position where they would feel the wrong that they had done on him. And while he was doing all of this, he had in his heart and mind a forgiving spirit towards them. And we get into chapter 48, 49, and we read that Joseph could no longer hide himself from them. He had accomplished his purpose in making them feel their guilt. That took strength of purpose, strength of character. But what took strength of character more was his forgiving spirit to them when he threw himself on them and wept. And he says in chapter 50, "Fear not, fear not," he says, "for I am in the place of God. But as for you, you thought evil against me." God meant it, or planned it, the word is. God planned it unto good, to bring it to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. There was Joseph's sense of purpose, the plan of God. Whatever that plan was, remember what the Lord said to Abraham? He took him out, not knowing whither he went. Not knowing whither he went, but following step by step and following the providences of God. If God does not give us the precept to follow, i.e. the direct command, let's follow gracefully the providences of God. And let's take to hand what God gives us in our state of life, live with it, serve with it as the purpose of God for our lives, and with the presence of God in our lives, without which you will be a negative, wizened up, complaining individual that will affect those around you. Take what life gives us with strength of purpose, strength of character, and turn it into God's glory in your life and in my life. Let's bow in prayer.